comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. Happy New Year, by the way. Now, for some of you, you have already celebrated New Year's. The 2011 is upon you. It's there. In your part of the world. And for some, you're still waiting for it to arrive. It will arrive in the United States right at the end of tonight's show on the Eastern Coast. So happy New Year's to everybody. And I hope 2011 certainly brings you all of the blessings and all the good things that you want and that you deserve. Tomorrow is the first Saturday of the month, right? Now, on the first Saturday of each month, I go into the chat room at showtime. Now, what that means is whatever time it is right now in your part of the world, what time is it? Take a look at the clock. Okay, tomorrow, 24 hours from now, at this time, I'll be in the chat room, all right? I'll be there for a couple of hours. I hope you'll join us, and we'll have a good time in there. We always do, and I look forward to you jumping into the chat room with us. Today is K-Files Day. You know what K-Files Day is? Well, K-Files, that's our free weekly newsletter, and K-Files Day is the day we send it out. So immediately following the show tonight, I'll begin sending out this week's edition of the K-Files. If you're not already subscribed to the K-Files, you really should be. It's free, so where's the genius in not being subscribed? I think you'll enjoy it. I really do. But if you don't, you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And there are no strings attached. There's, you know, we're not tracking you. We're not giving your email out to anybody. If you want our free weekly newsletter, it's truly free, and we want you to have it. So all you have to do to subscribe is just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. When you get there, you'll see a big link that says K-Files. And you can't miss it. It's right in the middle of the screen. Click that. And you can subscribe within just a few seconds. And then you will be in the know instead of in the dark. And in the know is always much, much better than being in the dark. Speaking of being in the know and as opposed to being in the dark, if you have electric lighting in your house, in fact, if you have electrical anything in your house, it is because of one man. His name is Nikola Tesla. Nikola Tesla is the subject of our show tonight. It has been said he invented the 20th century. We'll be back right after this.
Come on.
It has been said with some justification, in fact, with a great deal of justification, that Nikola Tesla invented the 20th century. And I would add the 21st century. Virtually every modern convenience that you enjoy is made possible by Tesla technology. By whatever means you're listening to this show right at this moment, you have Nikola Tesla to thank for that. My guest tonight is Tim Swartz, returning tonight to talk about the lost journals of Nikola Tesla. Tim Swartz, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're delighted you're here.
Why, thank you. Thank you very much, Kevin. It's a real pleasure to be back on your show.
Tim, this guy, Nikola Tesla, is really mysterious. Now, let me explain why I just said that. Not because he was eccentric. Every genius is, to some degree, eccentric. What's mysterious about Nikola Tesla is that even today, they do their best, people who write articles and who even mention Nikola Tesla, do their best to minimize this guy's impact. Now, just before the show, I thought to myself, let me just check and see how did Wikipedia handle this. They acknowledge that he's a genius, and they give basic information. But, you know, they say things like he ranks among the great inventors and scientists of the era. He doesn't rank among them. Not at all. He is light years ahead of them. Every single thing that we know as a modern convenience is made possible in some way by Nikola Tesla. Now, folks, in case you don't know who that is, I think most of you do, but if you don't, just look around your room and ask yourself, do I have electric lights? Well, if you do, it is not Thomas Edison, dear friends. It is Nikola Tesla that invented the alternating current that's running your lights, your television, your computer, the heat system in your home, the stove you cook with, the microwave oven that you use, the remote control that you use for your television was invented by Nikola Tesla. Everything that we call a modern convenience in some way is possible only because of this guy. He does not rank among the others. He is head and shoulders light years ahead of them, and yet they minimize that. Now, that's a mystery to me. And I want to start off with getting your observations about that. Why do you think that is? Oh, by the way, folks, he invented radio, not Marconi. So why do you think that is, Tim? Why does Nikola Tesla get shuffled under the rug here?
Well, Kevin, Nikola Tesla certainly in his lifetime could have used a really good agent, publicity manager, because as you just stated, I mean, as the years have gone by, he has basically been shuttled to the to the back of the closet, so to speak, when it comes to famous inventors or notable inventors in history. In fact, and I know this is probably the same case with you, Kevin, and with a lot of our listeners, while I was going to school, I never heard a single mention of Nikola Tesla. Electricity, you know, our modern electrical system, that was Edison. You know, Edison was the inventor of electricity. The radio, that was Marconi. You know, robotics, remote control, things like that, those went off to other inventors. Nikola Tesla's name was never mentioned in my education. And it really, you're right. It is a mystery, and it's something that I've often contemplated myself on the very.
Well, look, let's take one example.
Tesla ended up.
Let's take one example here.
getting shuffled down to the back burner. So
all right, let's take one example that everyone should know about. It is true that Edison invented the incandescent light bulb.
Right.
Okay. It is also true that Al Gore, the Department of Energy, lots of physicists are telling us if you want to save energy, get rid of incandescent light bulbs and go to fluorescent, and that's Tesla.
That's right. That's right.
So he's still being proven superior to Edison.
That's absolutely correct. You know, one of the reasons that I think, Kevin, that Tesla became nondescript in history, so to speak, was because of his personality battle with Edison. The two were contemporaries, of course, and the two never got along. When Tesla first came to the United States as a young man, his first job was with the Edison company. And Tesla realized right away that Edison was not quite the genius that he was professed to be. Edison would come up with the ideas, and then he had a whole laboratory of assistants, the people who did the real work, who would make Edison's idea come true. And then, of course, Edison would take the glory and the money for it. So as time went by and Edison's name became more and more famous, I think because of their personality clashes, and a lot of it also had to do with the battle of the currents between AC and DC currents, which Edison was a proponent of DC, he made sure that Tesla's name was forgotten as much as possible, especially as Tesla got older and became basically penniless, and his influence had waned quite a bit, that Edison made sure that Tesla was all but forgotten.
There was a, I think it was sixth grade class that wanted, they were studying science, and their teacher taught them about Tesla, and they were amazed because they had never heard of Tesla. One of the students had a father, I believe it was, who was a sculptor. And do you know this story?
Yes, I do.
Well, share that story with us.
Well, I'm going to have to pull my memory back here. Are you referring?
Well, it's they commissioned a sculpture of Nikola Tesla to have it placed in the Smithsonian next to Edison.
That's right. Yeah.
And the curator of the Smithsonian said he had no use for it. And they paid for it. It was done. It was just a gift, and Smithsonian Institute wouldn't accept it. The Smithsonian Institute is an amazingly, amazingly closed-minded, focused view, little museum. And, it's little, not in size, but it's very little in its thinking. Not just because of Tesla. They do this. Smithsonian goes out, scoops up evidence of things that don't fit their paradigm and their view, and then they lose it and deny they ever had it. And, I mean, there's quite a number of cases where they've done that.
Well, you know, Kevin, with Tesla, for a number of years, they had an exhibit at the Smithsonian basically saying that Edison was the inventor of our modern electrical system. And in fact, it may have been the same students as you were referring to and the teacher who finally petitioned the Smithsonian to change that. And it hasn't been that long ago, actually, that the Smithsonian finally grudgingly put in a small exhibit stating that Tesla was the inventor of the modern electrical system. But, I mean, you know, considering, let's see, Tesla operated from the late 19th century to, you know, to his passing in the 1940s, and all this time afterwards, Edison has been credited for something that Tesla did. And, you know, to me, that's coming from an institute like the Smithsonian, it's shocking. And, you know, and I hate to use the word conspiracy, but, you know, it's almost conspiratorial.
Well, it's really moronic, too. But let's get into the lost journals. I am really curious. Well, what are you talking about, the lost journals? That's the name of your book, The Lost Journals of Nikola Tesla. What are we talking about here?
Sure. Well, Nikola Tesla was an inventor who he came up with a lot. The majority of his inventors just strictly in his mind, and he was not too much into writing his ideas down onto paperwork. A lot of this, a lot of his notations actually came from his laboratory assistants. Over the years, though, I mean, Tesla did manage to accumulate quite a stack of, you know, journals and paperwork and things like that. Unfortunately, over the years, well, one example was that Tesla's laboratory in New York at one point burnt down,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of his journals and notes were lost in that disaster. Another situation was that later in his life, Tesla was forced to move from hotel to hotel in New York because basically he was penniless, and if it wasn't for the help of benefactors, he basically just would have been tossed out onto the street. Unfortunately, what would happen is that he would fall behind in his payments, and he would be forced to leave one hotel and move into another, and he would have to leave a lot of his personal effects behind. A lot of these personal effects included, you know, these years worth of scientific notations and journals and notebooks and things like that, that were often then stored in the basement of these hotels. Kind of as collateral, so to speak. You know, if Tesla would pay his bill, he'd get his records back. Unfortunately, he never was able to do this. As well, when he built his transmitting tower in Wardenclyffe, New York, when his money fell through eventually, and he had to close up shop and move away. When the land was later ceded back to the state of New York, this was just before World War II, they felt that this tall tower would be too good of a target for possible German U-boats, so they had it. They had the tower and his part of his laboratory blown up. People who were in the area that watched this happen stated that a lot of paperwork that had been left behind just was scattered to the wind. So a lot of some very important, not only historical, but scientific experimentation written down in these notes were lost to mankind.
Okay, but we've heard that when Tesla died, we've all heard the stories about when Tesla died, that government agents came in and just hauled crates of his notes away.
Somebody has stated that there was enough material to fill at least one or two train boxcars of material that the United States government took away at his death. And most of his notes have disappeared. Some of them were released by the United States government and ended up at the Tesla Museum in Belgrade.
Uh-huh.
And others have just completely vanished off the face of the earth. And what got me into writing the book, The Lost Journals of Nikola Tesla, besides my own just kind of a passion about this guy, trying to find out more about him, was that the late and his name has escaped me now. I'll think of it. Think of it in a minute here, Kevin. But anyway, a fellow author sent me an email that somebody had sent him saying that that he had found some notes by Nikola Tesla when he bought some crates of books at an auction sale in Connecticut, I think is where it was. And in these notes were a lot of Tesla material. And unfortunately, and this was really just in the very young days of the Internet, so this guy had no idea who Tesla was, and he actually he put out some messages on Usenet, you know, the old bulletin board system. And shortly thereafter, somebody broke into his house while he was preoccupied and stole all this material. So it then became my passion to try to find other people who may have knowledge about either the stolen material or additional material. You know, it seems to me that there has to be more material out there. I mean, if this guy was able to find some, then there has to be more out there. Now, I wrote this book in 2000. It was published in 2000, and since that time, there has been a number of really good revelations about Tesla, and you know, some of his missing material. In fact, since that time, I mean, we know a lot more about Tesla and some of his how would you put it, more mysterious experiments and ideas. So that, you know, that basically in a nutshell is what the Lost Journals Nikola Tesla is all about.
Okay, so does the book contain any recovered writings of Tesla?
It has some. Some of it was recorded by the gentleman who had found the material to begin with. I mean, he was able to remember some of it from memory because the material that he had been stolen, and this also included the floppy disk that he had transcribed this material on, and as well through the Freedom of Information Act was able to get some of the material that was referenced from his apartment when he died in New York, that was then taken by the government. A lot of this material ended up, of all places, the Wright Airfield in Dayton, Ohio. Later,
imagine that,
Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And some of this has to do with Tesla's idea of a death ray or a beam weapon.
Okay, we'll get into that when we come back from break. We've got a break coming up here in just about 5 seconds, and we'll get into the death ray and some more exotic things that Mr. Tesla was experimenting with. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Tim Swartz, and he is the author of Lost Journals of Nikola Tesla. When we went away, you had just mentioned Tesla's proposed death ray. We know that Tesla was involved in all kinds of well, at that time, we would have to say very exotic scientific ideas. Some of his ideas, even now, would seem exotic. One of the things that he successfully demonstrated was that he could transmit electrical power wirelessly. He could just transmit it through the air. and cause an electrical appliance to power up and work. And some people have talked about this death ray as being some bigger, greater version of that. Do you, what do you know about this death ray?
Sure. Kevin, the first time that the world learned about Tesla's death ray was on July 11th, 1934, from an article in the New York Times that read, Nikola Tesla, at the age of 78, bears new death beam. And the article reported that the new invention will send concentrated beams of particles through the free air, and I'm quoting here, such tremendous energy that they will bring down a fleet of 10,000 enemy airplanes at a distance of 250 miles. Now, Tesla had actually developed this idea a number of years before, but at the time, you have to understand, Tesla was the type of guy that his mind was just constantly racing from one invention to another. So, I mean, if he would lose interest in one idea because some other idea came into his mind, I mean, he'd leave it behind and go work on something else. And, you know, possibly he'd pick up the other idea, you know, later to work on it. Oftentimes he would just leave it aside.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that, that Tesla had come up with this idea probably as early as maybe, you know, 1915. So it wasn't until years later when, I mean, at the age of 78, I mean, you know, Tesla was almost practically forgotten. And so, I mean, he was just kind of just bringing out, you know, a lot of his old ideas. But what made Tesla's idea for his death beam so incredible is that we now know that it would actually work. And it possibly does work, as we found out from secret experiments by both the United States and the Soviet Union.
Tell us about those experiments.
Well, the thing that sets Tesla's death beam apart from other death rays that were being researched at the time, because, you know, at the time, actually, you know, the death ray, you know, like the Flash Gordon ray gun and things like that were being seriously contemplated by both the United Kingdom, Japan, and possibly even the Soviet Union. But what set Tesla's proposal apart was his unique vacuum chamber with one hand open to the atmosphere. And Tesla devised a vacuum seal by directing a high-velocity airstream at the tip of his gun to maintain high vacuum. The necessary pumping action then would be accomplished with a large Tesla turbine. So now we know from his description at the time that his death beam bears a resemblance to the charged particle beam weapons developed by both the United States and the Soviet Union during the Cold War. And it was in the 1970s that the United States, through some spy satellite photographs, spotted what they suspected was a Soviet beam weapon in the near the Chinese Soviet border, and they knew, the United States government knew from their own past research on Tesla technology taken from the lost journals that they had confiscated after Tesla's death, that this was a Tesla particle beam design based on Tesla's idea from the 1930s. And in fact, this is probably one of the reasons why the Reagan administration then later on started the Star Wars, you know, program to try to use various kinds of weapons, including lasers and particle beam weapons, to try to knock missiles out of the sky, because they realized that the Soviet Union was researching the very same kind of weaponry. And you have to realize now that this is all from a guy who came up with this idea back in the early 1900s.
And let me throw something in about Tesla that I think adds to one's appreciation of his genius. Nikola Tesla, to the best of my ability to research it, never received a college degree. He did attend college, but he got bored. He dropped out. He never finished. And he attended two or three colleges in his lifetime. One of them, he dropped out at the end of the first semester of his third year. That was the first college he attended. Another he attended for one semester, and then he dropped out. And, you know, it sort of appears he was a guy that, you know, for him, the college class was probably just boring because he was so far ahead of them. So his genius is truly his genius. It's not something that was drilled into him at university.
And the thing you have to also understand, Kevin, is that I've heard a lot of people over the years kind of disparage Tesla because of the mistaken belief that Tesla had actually developed a lot of these devices himself, the death ray, the possible what we would call anti-gravity flying machines, free energy devices, and things like that. Tesla did not build these devices. And, you know, Tesla came up with the idea. He did the research to show the feasibility of these devices, but face it, I mean, you know, the era that Tesla lived, it would have been practically impossible with the technology that he had available to him at the time to actually construct these kinds of devices. You know, he definitely was a man ahead of his time, and it's not until really very, very recently, you know, in modern time, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, the 70s, 80s, you know, onwards, that technology has actually caught up, or partially caught up, to a lot of Tesla's ideas, and I'm at a loss of words here, not his his ideas and his creativity. And that's why we're seeing a lot of technology that has just appeared very recently that is based on Tesla's ideas. A very good example right now is, and I'm sure you've seen these advertised during the Christmas holidays, these devices to charge your cell phones by just setting your cell phones down on a flat surface without any, you don't have to connect them directly to the cell phone. This is Tesla's technology. It's a technology of induction currents. And this was in part conceived by Tesla back in the late 19th century.
Would you say that it would be a stretch? Would I be reaching if I were to say that Tesla's genius really ranks with people like Galileo, Copernicus, Da Vinci?
Oh, yeah, that's not a reach at all. In fact, I often refer to Nikola Tesla as the modern-day Leonardo da Vinci. It's a shame that Tesla is not around today, considering the type of technology and the understanding of science and physics that we have today. It would just be the mind just boggles to think of what kind of things that Tesla could come up with now, you know, with the technology that he would have at his fingertips. Yeah, well, and, you know, and probably somebody like Tesla would be working for the government in such a top secret capacity that we probably would never know about what he was doing until, you know, 50, 70 years down the line. And that's the thing about Tesla, is that there are things being worked on now by the military, by the government, by corporations for who knows what kind of capacities, that are using Tesla's ideas, Tesla technology, for all kinds of things that we in the civilian world may never know about. And in fact, a lot of Tesla's ideas may have already have been perfected quite a while ago, and are being kept secret because of their potential military capabilities.
Well, I certainly would imagine that's the case. We hear a lot of rumors that HARP is Tesla technology. Do you know anything about that, the HARP system?
Yeah, the original inventor of HARP, and I'm going to have to refer to my notes here and just what the guy's name was. You know, HARP stands for, of course, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, and the gentleman who first patented the idea, his idea was to take a facility in the Alaska region and build it next to the oil wells there where they're pumping oil, and rather than pipelining the oil back down to the lower 50 or lower 40, whatever you want to call it, his idea was to burn it right there where they're pumping it out of the ground, and then using a Tesla-based technology, convert that energy from the burning of the oil into high-frequency radio energy, and then beam it back to the United States or wherever, you know, the highest bidder, I suppose, where it would then be converted into electricity. And the company that this gentleman was working for, and you'd have to see my desk here, Kevin. You know, I've just got.
Well, I believe his name was Eastland. Yeah, his name was Eastland, wasn't it?
That's right. That's right. Yes. Mm-hmm. The various companies that he the one company that he worked for was bought by one company and then shifted to another. And by the time everything was done, patents were basically lost.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Tim Swartz, and so far we've been talking about Nikola Tesla. We're going to move into talking about time travel in a moment. But I do want to cover one other thing about Tesla, because there have been reports that Tesla at one point believed that he was hearing communications from extraterrestrials, from another world. Today, I think we probably would call these EVPs, but let's talk about that a little bit. What do you know about that?
Sure. When Tesla's first delving into the mysterious radio signals happened when he was doing research in Colorado Springs in the late 1890s. He built an experimental station near Pikes Peak. And his idea at the time was that he wanted to study lightning to see if there was a way that he could he wanted to understand atmospheric electricity better. He wanted to see if a lightning could be harnessed to power, you know, our technology. And he also wanted to see how if it was possible. This was part of his early research into trying to develop an apparatus to transmit electricity either through the atmosphere or in a resonance capacity through the Earth itself. So one evening when he was doing his experiments at Pikes Peak, he noticed that he was receiving a strange repeating signal being picked up by his radio transmitter. Now, at this time, Tesla, as far as I know, was the only person on the planet who was transmitting anything, who had any kind of radio transmitter and who had any kind of radio receiver. So, and Tesla was well aware of this himself, and he speculated later in a newspaper interview that he was possibly the first person on Earth to hear one planet greeting another. Now, these signals were, you know, basically just like a staticky type of, you know, dots and dashes type of signals. But later, as Tesla's equipment grew more sophisticated, and he started delving into extremely high frequency radio signals and very low frequencies, he started picking up what appeared to him to be a voice transmissions, and he actually came up with one of the first receivers using, you know, magnets and cones to actually to be able to distinguish these voice transmissions. And he speculated in some of his writings that that he actually may be listening to, as he referred to the colloquialism of the day, Marshals, I think is what the term is, which, you know, it means Martians. We'd call them Martians today. Or, you know, he wasn't sure. You know, the signals themselves seemed to be extremely strong, like the transmitter was within the planet's, you know, within the planet's own way. You know, he didn't feel that he was actually receiving transmissions from another planet, and he speculated at the time that the Martians could be here. And, you know, naturally, the newspapers had a field day, and he never quite lived these speculations down. Some of the transmissions that he received were somewhat nonsensical, words and phrases. Sometimes they seem to be in English. Sometimes they seem to be in recognizable foreign languages, French, German, that sort of thing. Other times, as he referred to them, they were guttural and rapid-paced, almost like and this is my own observation, like a speeded-up phonograph record or a tape that you would speed up.
Something like the transmissions that NASA picked up from Saturn, huh?
Exactly. Well, and let's not forget, during the Gemini and Apollo missions, Kevin, there was a reception not only by the astronauts, but by the mission control crew of strange radio signals that sound suspiciously similar to what Tesla was picking up, guttural voices, strange phrases.
Well, one of the Apollo missions actually picked up music.
That's right. Yeah. And Tesla also recorded the same thing. Now, it sounds suspiciously like what we refer to as electronic voice phenomena. Now, you know, Ghost Hunters and other programs have made these extremely popular, saying that they could be from discarnate entities or the dead. But who knows? I mean, you know, it's you receive these signals through radios or on digital recorders. It's hard to say what you're picking up. But Tesla seems to be one of the first people to actually record the reception of these signals.
All right, I want to move on to time travel. Because I know you've done some research into what is being done with time travel. Frankly, I have to tell you, I think time travel makes great movies. I have a really difficult time understanding. I'm not saying it's impossible. I have a difficult time understanding how it would be possible to go backward in time. And if it is possible, I have a hard time understanding how you could go back farther than the date of the invention of the time machine. But let's talk about time travel. You've been poking around looking for information about time travel, and I understand you've found some information. What do we know about that?
Well, actually, Kevin, Nikola Tesla himself made a reference to an accident that he had in 1895 to a reporter for the New York Herald. Tesla, while conducting research with his step-up transformer, he was using highly charged rotating magnetic fields as part of his research. And he told the reporter at the time that he was accidentally hit by 3.5 million volts. This was on March 13th, 1895. I'm afraid, said Tesla, that you won't find me a pleasant companion tonight. The fact is that I was almost killed today. He told the reporter that a spark jumped 3 feet through the air and struck him on his right shoulder. He said if his assistant had not turned off the current instantly, it might have been the end of me. Now, Tesla said that on contact resonating electromagnetic charge, he found himself outside, and this is his quote, outside his time frame reference. He reported that he could see the immediate past, present, and future all at once, but he was paralyzed within the electromagnetic field, unable to help himself. And his assistant, by turning off the current, released Tesla before any permanent damage was done. So now this sounds, to me, an awful lot like what would later be known as the Philadelphia experiments. With the same kind of results where the sailors on this ship were left outside their time frame reference with what's reportedly to be disastrous results. Now, a lot of people a lot of researchers and writers have attributed Tesla as being personally involved with the Philadelphia experiments. And my research, I have not found any evidence to be the case. At the time that the Philadelphia experiment allegedly occurred, Tesla was in extremely ill health and fairly close to death in Manhattan. In fact, shortly before all this, he had been struck by a taxi cab and had been pretty gravely injured.
All right, we're going to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Tim Swartz. Let me say, for those of you who are just now joining us in this second hour, welcome aboard, and I am sincerely sympathetic for whatever it is that has caused you to miss the first hour. We're talking about Nikola Tesla, and I know a lot of folks out there know who Nikola Tesla is, and a lot of folks do not. Amazingly, there are many, many people who have never heard of Nikola Tesla, even though you use his inventions every day and you are using his inventions right at this moment. He invented the 20th century. It was the 20th century is the century of technology and electricity, electrical power, remote control. Tesla is the inventor of the early version of radar, remote control, wireless power, fluorescent lights, alternating current. He's invented everything you use, and everything you use uses his technology. So we're talking about Nikola Tesla with Tim Swartz, and he's the author of a book called Lost Journals of Nikola Tesla. We were talking about time travel, and Tim, you said that Tesla experienced sort of a time jump or a time slip.
Yes, that's correct.
Is there anything happening with time travel now? I mean, is there? We hear rumors about it, but is there any ongoing kind of research and furthering Tesla technology to do time travel?
Well, Kevin, you know, it's funny because back when I was a kid, I mean, just to even suggest that scientists would seriously contemplate the idea of time travel was laughable. No scientist would even dare suggest that that time travel had any basis in fact.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, there are a lot of leading scientists and physicists who say that based on the Einsteinian theories now, that time travel could be possible in one form or another.
Well, as a matter of fact, Dr. Michio Kaku,
yes,
has stated on this show and other shows that there's nothing in physics that prohibits it.
Yeah, what prohibits it seems to be our current technology and understanding, true understanding of the of how the universe works.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Kevin, there's been a lot of a scuttlebutt going on, you know, across the internet, saying that the United States government or the military or whoever has actually developed a time travel capacity. Based, in fact, on what I was talking about earlier, the Philadelphia experiment, which, if your listeners aren't familiar with that, that's supposedly an experiment that happened in the Philadelphia shipyard in 1943, where the a U.S. Navy destroyer was being degaussed using high-intensity rotating magnetic fields, and for some reason or another, actually disappeared. It was either teleported or involved time travel, that sort of thing. And that later experiments that took place at a military base on Montauk, Long Island, perfected this technology to actually achieve time travel. You know, this is one of these stories that, you know, I mean, it sounds good, and boy, I mean, it would be really great, but we really don't have any good hard evidence that any of this is actually true. I'm not going to say that it's not, but I'm not going to say that it is. You know, it's going to be up to the listener or the reader. reader to do his research and decide for himself. Now, I will say that I don't think that it's impossible, because I do know that the military science is probably a good 50 to 70 years ahead of civilian science. And it's considering the jumps in technology that we have experienced since, say, the Wright brothers first came up with their airplane, and how long was it that we were walking on the moon? So it wouldn't surprise me that there could be some kind of a leap in technology that has been discovered by military scientists. But as for what we know right now, time travel, if it is possible, is still quite a ways into the future. But then again, I've speculated in some of my own books, Kevin, that the UFO phenomena may be, or at least one aspect of the UFO phenomena could be an example of time travel, either visitors from our own future, or actually, extraterrestrial visitors who use time travel as a form of propulsion. Considering the size of the universe and the vast distances between, star system to star system, you would have to use something akin to time travel, I would think, to be able to get from here to there, within a reasonable amount of time.
Well, one of the things that seems a great deal more plausible to me, and I'm not saying that time travel is not possible, but and I'm sure that at some point, if we don't already have that, we will. But something that seems a lot more plausible to me, and I bet you we've got it, is teleportation.
Oh, I agree.
I bet they found out how to do that. And, some of those same sites that have the stories about Montauk and about time travel also talk about teleportation at Montauk, and that they have a chair there that they can put someone in, and by whatever means, they are teleported to Mars, to a base on Mars. Now, again, I'm like you. I mean, that sounds really cool. That sounds really interesting. But for me to be able to say, yeah, I know that's true, no, I can't say that. But I can say that major scientists tell us that teleportation is certainly not implausible, and that there's nothing in physics to prevent it. It seems that the idea of disassembling every particle of you into individual particles and beaming them somewhere could be done. But what the scientists say is, yeah, but you are not the particles. And when we reassemble the particles over there, where are you with all the memories and knowledge and everything? So I would think that would be a major problem.
Would it be you coming out on the other side?
Yeah, that's a good question. Would it be?
Well, Kevin, if any of your listeners have had experiences themselves, or have heard of people who have had these experiences in the realm of the paranormal, ghostly experiments in the form of what are called poltergeist, noisy spirits in German. One of the key aspects of the poltergeist phenomena is the seemingly teleportation of an object from one room to the other through walls or containers or things like that. I myself, when I was doing a haunted house investigation back in the 1980s, I saw rocks coming down from the ceiling of this house, sitting in a living room with the couple whose house was haunted, and I watched these small stones just fall. They just seemed to appear about an inch or so below the ceiling and fall to the floor.
And okay, so these are not rocks that had been attached to the ceiling.
No. We're talking about this was an old farmhouse, and it was a ceiling that was covered over in plaster, you know, plaster of Paris. It was smooth, and in fact, the rocks were originating from the center of the ceiling. There was no other, there's no light fixtures or anything else nearby, no holes or anything. And what convinced me that this was a real phenomena was that based on a similar experiment by the late Ivan Sanderson, I picked up these rocks, and they were, you know, small rocks like you pick up from your driveway or something like that. And I marked them with a Sharpie with an X, and then I went to the back door and I threw them out the back door into the cornfield. This was nighttime, into the cornfield behind the house. Came back in, sat down, and almost immediately these very same rocks fell back down at my feet from the ceiling. So I'm pretty much convinced that teleportation can happen.
But see, that's rocks, and you know, teleportation of a human being, I think you could teleport the matter, but I'm not sure that you could teleport the human that goes with that matter.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's something. Well, now, you know, of course, and we have to take this story, you know, with a grain of salt. But you know, the Uri Geller claimed that he was accidentally teleported to the house of a researcher. You know, he said that he was jogging in New York and found himself suddenly I can't remember exactly, just outside the house or inside the house, and this researcher confirmed that Geller did show up there. And, you know, whether or not this is a true story or not, I know a lot of people, you know, say that that Geller, you know, has made his living, you know, off of lies and deception. But you know, that's one story.
Well, you know, that's a pretty serious charge to say somebody's making their living off of lies and deception, and the people that make that charge, I think, need to stop and consider something, and that is, it's fine to make that charge if you have the proof. If you don't, if it's just your opinion, then, you know, that's a pretty serious thing. The reason I say that is because in this world, things that are improbable and considered to be impossible do happen, and they happen on a regular basis. Out in the universe, it happens every day out in the cosmos. Things that we think are improbable, implausible, and even impossible still happen. And so just because, you know, Geller makes, and he's not a friend of mine, so I'm not defending him based on that. Geller makes some claims and does some demonstrations of things that seem improbable, implausible, and sometimes impossible. That doesn't mean that they're not real.
Kevin, you know, my good friend Timothy Green Beckley has met Uri Geller a number of times and has experienced firsthand some of the strange phenomena that that Geller allegedly produces, you know, the bending of keys and spoons and things like that. And Mr. Beckley, I mean, he says that he has witnessed this stuff firsthand, and he is convinced that Geller has actual abilities that cannot be explained, you know, under normal circumstances.
Well, and look, we could say the same thing for Tesla. Tesla had abilities that cannot be explained. And as I said, you know, his genius was not something manufactured in a university. His genius was native to him. And as an example, he would have these bright flashes of light in his eyes and would see a vision of an invention and would see it inside and out, every working part, how it works, its dimensions, everything. And then when he would come out of that, he would build it.
Yes. Yes, and that's one of the reasons why Tesla did not keep as many notes as he should have, because he did. He had this wonderful ability where he could just suddenly envision, almost like a holograph in front of his eyes, his invention, and like you said, then he would go about and make it a reality.
Mm-hmm.
But now Tesla, he was not a believer in psychic powers or, you know, or ghosts or paranormal phenomena. I mean, he was rooted in scientific principle, and in fact he reacted very badly one time when representatives from a paranormal society approached him to become a member of their society because they felt that his abilities were psychical or paranormal, and he told them in no uncertain terms to get out, that he was a scientist and he had no room in his life for such nonsense.
There's a story out there about, of course, it's part of the story is very famous, and that is where he developed a power system for an electric motor that was put into a car.
Mm-hmm.
And this car, it did not have a battery as part of the power system. He developed this power system with it had some kind of a sort of an antenna on the back of the car. And it was gathering energy from, as he said in those days, the ether, we would say, from the atmosphere, from out there. And all kinds of people drove this car. The mayor of New York drove this car. Senators drove the car. Celebrities drove the car. It just didn't have to be recharged. It didn't. You know, somebody took it on one test drive for about 90 miles and came back. And so it was all the rage. And then some of the newspapers, of course, looking for more sales, began to publish that Tesla was, he got his abilities and knowledge because he was cavorting with the powers of darkness. Tesla took the power unit out of the car and said, fine, you think it's powers of darkness? Fine. He took the little power unit out, took it back to his lab, nobody ever saw it again. And we don't know how it worked, and we don't know how it worked because of some jackass media.
That's right. That's right. That car, by the way, Kevin, was a Pierce Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely correct. I mean, we don't have any idea on how he actually made this device work. I mean, the witnesses said that the little unit, the contraption that he attached to this car had antennas on it. So now, whether or not he had close by an electrical transmitter based on his Wardenclyffe project, you know, but more closely perfected by that time, where he was actually transmitting electricity through the atmosphere so that this car could pick it up through its antennas. Or some people have actually speculated that because Tesla had been working on what we would refer to now as a free energy device, whether or not he had come up with a device that could actually pull energy out of the atmosphere with these antennas and to basically perpetually power this car. You know, as long as you had this this gadget to his car, hooked up and receiving, that it would run as long as you wanted it to.
That particular car that was used in the experiment is in Canada now. I forget which city. I could be wrong, but I think it's Ontario area. I don't know which city, but I think it's in the Ontario area. And it's a beautiful crimson red Pierce Arrow. And it's owned by a private individual there now. Of course, minus the Tesla technology.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this story is that when Tesla added this device to the car, he went to a local radio store and purchased a handful of tubes, wires, and assorted resistors, a box measuring 24 inches long to house the circuits, and then put them together right there on the spots. And hooked it in. Said he pushed the two rods about into the box and stated, "We now have power." And then the vehicle, powered by an AC motor, was driven up to speeds of 90 miles per hour,
mm-hmm.
performed better than any internal combustion engine of its day. So you know, it's I would love to know, as I'm sure a lot of other people out there would, you know, we'd love to know just what Tesla had there. I'm sure somebody out there knows what kind of technology that he was using and is making use of it now. It's just not available to the general public for, well, I'm sure we can all guess for what reasons.
Yeah, it's called Oil Company Profits.
Yep. And I'm pretty certain, Kevin, that this type of technology in more recent times has been redeveloped, and anybody who makes the mistake of announcing that that they've developed a new technology along these lines, you know, finds themselves bought out, or if they're not willing to be bought out, they find themselves then under unfortunate circumstances. Either their bank suddenly...
Or under the ground.
Yeah.
Under unfortunate circumstances or under the ground.
Under the ground, that's right. Mm-hmm. and that's happened time and time again, especially with a lot of these, you know, as I refer to them, you know, garage or basement inventors, who say that they've come across an interesting new breakthrough, and then all of a sudden they find their skulls broke through.
Yeah, and there are very real situations where that happens. And it's not just the oil companies. It's much, much bigger than that that oppose this. It's incredibly huge. By the way, folks, I would recommend a film if you're interested in wanting to know who's keeping you hooked to oil and a whole lot of other things. The film is Zeitgeist Addendum. Some of you have seen Zeitgeist. You need to see Zeitgeist Addendum. We'll be back right after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Tim Swartz. And Tim, let's talk a little. I've been talking about from the beginning of the show how Tesla really invented the 20th century, and by extension, the 21st century. Let's talk a little bit about his experiments and research in radiation. What was he up with that? What was he up to?
Well, when you say radiation, you mean like atomic radiation?
He did some early experiments in nuclear physics, yeah.
Well, Tesla was not a big believer in Einsteinian physics. Tesla's idea was that the universe was how did he put it? It was like governed by electromagnetic fields and things like that. And when Einstein first came out with his general theory of relativity, Tesla didn't think too much about that. He attributed everything to electromagnetic fields, electricity, field theory, and things like that. That also included radiation in the form, uranium isotopes and things like that. Tesla thought that this was all governed by electromagnetics. And one of the mistakes that I see that a lot of physicists have made over the years, Newtonian physics, quantum physics, Einsteinian physics, and Tesla physics, is that every one of them thinks that their idea, their physics, is the be-all and do-all of the universe. And I think actually it ends up that I think every one of them is right. We see them operating on different levels of the universe. Quantum physics operates on a very minute scale. Newtonian physics seems to be more of a here-now type of situation, and so on and so forth.
Well, one of the things, I agree with you, and one of the things that I have proposed to several noted physicists on this show, and all of them have sort of said, I'll have to think about that. That sounds interesting. So here it is. And it's basically what you just said. But for Einstein, everything was mass and velocity. For Tesla, it was basically frequency. When you talk about electromagnetic fields, you're talking about frequencies too. But anything that has mass that's moving at any velocity is producing a frequency. And so you can't have one without the other. You can't have frequency. At least I would say you can't have frequency without particles. If there is nothing, absolutely nothing to modulate, then you don't have frequency. Something has to move in order. That's what frequency means. It means how fast is it moving up and down in a wave? And so frequency and velocity and mass, it all goes together. You don't have one without the other. Each produces the other and is dependent on the other. So that basically then what you've got, if you've got, let's say you have a photon, and the photon's moving through space, obviously at the speed of light, right?
Right.
Well, this photon is producing frequencies, and all frequencies have harmonics. And so you have sub-frequencies going out in every direction. What you've got is a sphere of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell us that our universe is basically a sphere of energy. That's kind of interesting. Atoms are spheres of energy with other little spheres orbiting around them. And so I think you're right. I think it's sort of, it reminds me, Tim, I know you've heard this story. The story of some blind men who discover an elephant.
Yes.
And they're feeling all over this elephant trying to feel, and by feeling the elephant, be able to describe it. And so one is describing a tusk, and he says, that's what an elephant is. the description he gives of this tusk, he said, that's an elephant. One has the trunk. And he feels of the trunk, and he describes it, and he says, no, that's the elephant. One has his feeling all over this elephant's leg and describes it, and he says, no, that's the elephant. Well, they're all right.
That's right.
They're only wrong when they say that their description is exclusively the elephant.
That's correct, and that's exactly in my opinion. I mean, that's one of the all too human faults, naturally. Of Tesla. Tesla, I mean, all of his biographers agree. I mean, he had an ego, but then again, most scientists and inventors do. Once he got an idea into his head, it was very hard to dissuade him otherwise. One thing that I should point out to our listeners is that Tesla did do extensive research into light frequencies such as X-rays. Tesla was one of the first to develop a working X-ray machine, and along with his good friend Mark Twain, I should add, did a number of experiments with X-rays, taking pictures of their hands and feet, and so forth. Tesla also developed a device that could gather, as he put it, cosmic radiation. Sort of like what we would describe today as a solar panel, but instead of sunlight, Tesla's device could absorb energy at any time of the day or night, which has led some people to speculate that possibly he was one of the first to come up with a device that could gather cosmic rays, cosmic radiations, and make use of it. These are the types of devices that, if Tesla was alive today and was coming up with them, probably we'd never hear about them. Mm-hmm. First of all, these kind of devices are verboten at the patent office. You cannot go to the patent office today and have a device that, say, makes solar panels more efficient or something that could gather cosmic rays to run a device, because that would be along the lines of a perpetual motion device, and according to the rules of the patent office, patents cannot be granted for such devices.
Well, yes, and I think that's moronic as well, because although I would certainly agree that under all normal circumstances, the second law of thermodynamics, entropy, applies to everything in motion. I think it is possible that you, when you're talking about energy, the entropy of the energy could be so slow, so slight. Entropy means it runs down, folks. It's running down. You wind a watch up, entropy means it's going to wind down. It's going to run down. So the entropy of the energy, when you're talking about certain forms of energy, is so slight that it's going to keep going for a long, long, long time. As proof of this, there are places on this planet so radioactive, they will never be suitable for humans to go in and visit. There is a room that is used. I think it's at. I could be wrong about this. I think it's at Lawrence Livermore. There's a room that's used for certain tests of radiation that is so excessively radioactive that it can never ever be entered by a human ever again. Now, why is that? It's because the entropy of that radiation is so slight. Is it perpetual motion? It may as well be when compared to human life. It may as well be.
Well, Kevin, I don't think that these rules by the patent office were set up with our best interest in mind. I think they were set up with somebody else's interest in mind. Somebody else who either is whose fortunes, so to speak, are directly proportional to not having these kinds of devices put onto the market, or by military powers who are utilizing these types of technology and do not want to don't want them to get into the hands of the other side, so to speak.
Well, it's a good thing that nobody has tried to patent the sun, because as compared to the human lifespan, it certainly is perpetual motion.
Yep, that's well, and, but they're working on that, you know. I mean, they're trying to develop, you know, a reactor that works just like the sun. And
well, you know, I'm not sure that's real smart either, because if you develop a reactor that works just like the sun, can you turn it off?
Well, probably not. Yeah, and that's one of the quandaries about this type of technology, is that has a lot of people worried. You know, of course, now, you know, scientists in the business say that, oh, well, you know, if we are able to achieve fusion as like the sun, that we could turn it off if we want to, but like you said, can you would it actually be able to be turned off?
Well, I want to see them do it first, so let them turn off the sun for a little while first. And then we'll let them play with it in their lab. I think Tesla had experiments going on that there were people at the time who had the same sort of feeling that I just expressed. They were afraid of his technology. And there are people today that are afraid of Tesla technology. They think that if it's Tesla technology, it's just death and destruction. But the fact is, most life-saving devices rely on Tesla technology.
That's correct. That's right.
And certainly the electricity in the operating room that runs the lights, that runs the equipment, all of that equipment is run by electricity that is a Tesla invention.
Well, besides that, Kevin, Tesla actually came up with a number of healing devices based on field technology, electromagnetism, and things like that. That he had patented for the use of hospitals.
Okay, tell us about that. What kind of healing technology?
A lot of these devices would be used for simple ailments, you know, like arthritis.
Okay, we'll have to get the rest of that answer when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. So don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Tim Schwartz. We're talking about Nikola Tesla. You were telling us about some of the healing devices that he invented, and we had to go to break. Let's pick up there.
Well, Tesla actually had a company called the Tesla Electrotherapeutic Company, and it was one of his commercial enterprises that was very successful in his day. And he created devices that used oscillating electrical currents and strong vibrations and electromagnetic fields. And the idea was to promote healing of the body and soothe aches and pains. He especially was interested in targeting arthritis and also with coming up with a way to target tumors that were inoperable, which, you know, in that day and age, most of them were. And he had the idea that he could actually resonate a frequency to a point where it would target specifically that tumor in the body and not affect any other portion of the body, which, interesting enough, this is the same kind of research that is now just starting to come back again, using the very same ideas that Tesla had. And not only did Tesla develop these devices for other people, but he used them on himself. He especially, there was one device that he used that would help him, rejuvenate him after long stretches of work without food or sleep. His friend Mark Twain also enjoyed tremendously the experiences that he had with these machines. I guess there was one device that that used some like very deep resonating vibrations that would go through his body that he really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, one time it gave him a case of spontaneous diarrhea, one of the side effects with this machine. But Tesla's other devices were very popular at the time, but they fell out of favor after a while when other people got into the market using electrified machines, basically nothing more than just, you know, batteries that would shock you. And then, of course, you had the people who had radiation machines that just literally would irradiate you using radium, saying that could heal you from various ailments. So, unfortunately, Tesla's devices fell out of favor along the same time with these other charlatan machines.
Sort of guilt by association, I guess.
Well, very much so. You know, at the same time, you had the Food and Drug Administration coming out, the whole idea that you could cure ailments using drugs and surgery became more popular rather than using these kinds of non-intrusive devices, so to speak. And of course, Tesla was also a very big proponent. He felt that the X-ray machine could be used in for medical practices to see inside the body, to see what was going on inside, to try to diagnose illnesses. Not as a healing device. You know, there were some people at the time that used X-rays in an attempt to create cures of various kinds, but of course we now know they actually caused more problems than they could cure. But Tesla had the bright idea that you could use an X-ray to look inside of somebody's body to try to pinpoint what was going on inside.
Well, yeah, but you know, we use a form of X-ray in cancer treatment where it's a focused beam of radiation or X-ray focused on a tumor, and we say it's radiation treatment. I'm not a big proponent of it, but it is used and is an accepted treatment in medical science today.
Well, Kevin, I don't know if you remember this, but when I was a kid, you could go into a shoe store, and they had a machine in there that you could put your feet into this machine, and you could actually look into it, and you could actually see the bones of your feet. It wasn't too long afterwards that became illegal because of, you know, God knows how much you know, X-ray radiation you were putting into yourself for a novelty device.
I have heard of those, but I honestly don't remember ever experiencing one of those, but I have heard of them.
Yep, well, there was a shoe store in the little town that I grew up in that had one of those devices, and it seems to me that, I mean, even at that time, there was a lot, you know, there was cautions about using this machine, but, you know, I mean, you grew up in a little town in the Midwest, and, you know, all the...
Yeah. Well, listen, I really want to thank you for being with us here this evening. Tesla is absolutely one of the most fascinating people who has ever lived on this planet. And we're still benefiting from his work, and I guess we will, probably for several centuries, be benefiting from his work.
Yes, I agree with that. We will be benefiting if the powers that be allow us to benefit from this technology.
Well, Tesla is living proof of something that I say, and people really scratch their heads when I say this. But everything that ever is going to be possible ever is possible right now. It's just waiting for someone to think correctly. And Tesla's proof of that. He was thinking more correctly than other people in his day. And so all of the things that he said were possible, he made them possible. And we benefit from them today. And so, you know, anything that's ever going to be possible has always been possible. And it's just waiting on someone to think correctly. Right thinking is the road to the future.
Well, I hate to use this term, Kevin, but Nikola Tesla is a perfect example of somebody who really thought outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he truly did.
And we're benefiting from that kind of thinking today.
Well, I think we are, and I know we are, and everyone who's listening to the show tonight is listening because of Nikola Tesla. Even if you didn't know his name, you think Marconi invented the radio, and you're wrong. It's Nikola Tesla. And by the way, if you didn't know, folks, that's been ruled on by the Supreme Court, and Tesla wins. He invented radio. Tim, just stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for tonight. That's a wrap for this week. I hope you have enjoyed this week. It's been a very interesting week, a little bit challenging, but very, very interesting. And I want to, as the show comes to a close, and we're only minutes away from the new year arriving on the east coast of the United States. We're only about 2.5 minutes away, something like that, 2 minutes away. I want to wish everyone listening to the show a very, very happy new year. And I hope this new year is going to be challenging. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. But I hope everyone stays seated and buckled in, because you only get hurt on a roller coaster if you get out while it's moving. So let's go along for the ride. Let's enjoy it. It's going to be fun and exciting. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.